hello, I am here now. And I'm like, okay. Now I'm just like, okay, wait, this is real. You just sort of, it grabs you because you go, it breaks. It's different. They're all like identical. And then it's just like, this is different one. You go, okay, wait, this guy's doing something different. And just the fact that he's doing something different has mean he's made a choice. You have to make choices both as a, like, in all, as any creator, you just have to make choices.
Welcome, Spacers. My name is Christopher Schmidt, and today we're going to talk about the making of Firewatch, the game, with Sean Vonneman. Sean is a video game designer, writer, podcast host. He was also the co-project leader and lead writer of The Walking Dead and Puzzle Agent 2. He also wrote the third episode of Tales of Monkey Island and was the designer of Wallace and Gromit's Grand Adventures and the writer of the third episode, Muzzled. He's one of the regular hosts of Idle Thumbs podcast. And today we primarily talk about his own studio he co-founded, Campo Santo, and their first game, Firewatch. Firewatch is an emotional drama that centers around the character Henry. He's a man whose home life is in freefall, and he takes a job as a fire lookout in the National Forest of Shenandoah in what appears to be a way to isolate and numb him from his problems. Within this lush, stylized, and expansive forest, he finds mysteries within the forest, and with his boss, Delilah, who's also a lookout on a tower many, many miles away. Some notes on where I'll be. On May 10th, I'll be emceeing the Virtual Accessibility Conference, AccessU Summit. It's a one-day, one-track virtual conference about advanced web and mobile accessibility. You can get up to speed on accessibility without you and your colleagues having to leave the office. Learn more about it at accessusummit.com. That's access, the letter U, summit, all one word, .com. Also, I'll be hosting the CSS DevConf in San Antonio, Texas, on October 17th and 18th. We'll be one block away from the Alamo on the famous Riverwalk. And we have speakers such as Trent Walton, Chris Coyer, Rachel Andrews, Jonathan Snook, Estelle Weil, and just a whole bunch of great content and a lot of great fun, too. So join us at San Antonio, Texas, for the CSS DevConf. Learn more about it and grab an early bird ticket before they're gone at cssdevconf.com. Hope to see you there. And with that, let's get on with the show.
Live, it's live. What are you going to do? You can't stop him. He doesn't give a shit. Also, let me know if I shouldn't swear. Chris, yeah,
minimal swear.
I'll try to. Okay, for yeah, of course. I'll keep it to a minimum. Sorry. That's going to be very difficult.
Actually, especially if you with license, I'm trying to think now, a sound effect from Firewatch to us to bleep you with, then I'm okay with you, sir.
Oh, done.
Ah.
Easy. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Free.
Okay, I was saying thanks for being on the show, for being here.
My pleasure.
Chris and I think we played separately, so we both enjoyed the game. And
you guys didn't play the Firewatch co-op mode?
No.
Wait, nobody knows about it because it doesn't exist. No, I'm just kidding.
Exclusive.
This is the
first. The game came out, and then Chris was talking about it, and then I was like, I'll play it, and then everyone played it. And then I was just entertained by how different it was of a game. And so that's probably my first question. I just want to get out of the way is it's felt like some, there was, and I don't mean that, like, I guess I just get out of the way. It's just, like, it felt like it was hard for people to label the game as like a shooter or what have you. So I'm not a big gamer, so I enjoy the game immensely. So do you feel like there was some, a lot of blowback because of that? Or do you feel like,
I don't think there was blowback so much. It was hard early to communicate what we were building and get people excited about it, right? So we couldn't, like, we think about market, like, first off, we have no marketing people at our studio, like, officially, but we do all of our own marketing. So marketing is sort of like a part of the design process. And I think that's really good because the whole time you're trying to communicate, you're trying to think about how do we tell people what this thing is going to be? And then when they're playing it, how are we subtly telling them what this thing is while they're experiencing it? So it just gets you thinking about customers like all the time. And like, it's like video games is a business. Like you have to like sell your games if you want to continue to exist, right? So that was really hard. That was really, really difficult because you don't have like a genre to just be like, it's an RTS. It's a whatever. I find that really exciting, though. I find that to be really, really valuable because you still have to market your game. So what we decided to do was just market it like a movie. Just try to market it like character and story and tell people how exciting the story and how beautiful the world was going to be. And I think that was really, really good for the game because it, like, people who play games can just project onto the trailer or screenshot or whatever the sorts of things they think you're going to do. But then for people who don't play games that much, like yourself, you get to sort of, you're being spoken to in a language that you understand, which is like entertainment. And I think that's really kind of good. And I also think just as an industry, it's really good to be making games that are sort of not genre-y. They're not able to be classified in genre because we have been sort of programmed as like a entertainment digesting public to just that genre is like is like there's no alternative to something genreless or like multi-genre, whereas 50 years ago or like in, if you look at like the films of the 70s, that wasn't the case. Like you could just make a movie for adults and you didn't have to worry about what genre it fit in. You didn't have to worry about if it was a tentpole or you didn't have to worry about if it was whatever, like in a pre-Jaws, pre-Star Wars world. So that's really good, I think. I think that means that there can just be like a broader swath of games. Like I went out to dinner last night with my buddy Amir Rao, who runs a company called Supergiant, and they made Bastion and Transistor, and their new game is called Pyre, and they just showed Pyre at PAX, and I've been sort of like playtesting Pyre for, I don't know, about 4 months now, 6 months, and the first time I played it, I was like, what the fuck is this? Oh, sorry, I'm not supposed to start this podcast. Like, what is this? Like, this is amazing. Like, it doesn't have, because he's like, oh yeah, coming out of PAX, it was weird, it was disconcerting that some people were saying that the game was weird in terms of genre. And I was like, that's just because they don't have a language for describing what it is. They just have to kind of say an amalgam of, they have to actually use descriptive words. Yeah. and so that's a very strange feeling, I think, for people who write about games and talk about games. So
yeah,
I've gone on for a while now talking about this, but I think it's really good. I think it's awesome. I think like that game is going to be like a weird strategy adventure RPG sport thing. And that's awesome. Like that's great. That means that like we can stop thinking about what, like just the possibility space of what games can be is bigger. And if the possibility space is bigger, the industry grows and more people are attracted to it. And the industry is just like more confident and has like a marketplace of ideas. And I think it's really good. That's a good question. I really like talking about that stuff, obviously, because I've just been talking about it for an hour. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think what's cool about that is like, or, and also uncool is like Firewatch, the game. If I'm thinking like I could plant my dad or my mom or somebody who doesn't normally game in front of it, and they would play it and enjoy it, I think. But if they heard, hey, you're going to play a video game, and it's kind of like a movie, and you know, you try to do just what you did, then sometimes they're like turned off by it or whatever. But it is like just getting them in the door, and then I'm sure you'd leave them with it, and they'd be like hooked on this game as an experience, just regardless, not worried about gaming as a thing, you know, like as a genre even of itself or whatever. So
yeah, getting them in the door is the thing, right? Just getting people to sit down for 5 seconds and go, oh, wait, what is this? And that's been something that's been really successful with Firewatch in a way that we are like really proud of, but also weren't expecting because you can't expect that sort of thing. So yeah, I knew that it was possible. At Christmas, I played the game for my girlfriend's family sat down and started playing it. And then by the end, like there was just like 9 people in the room, and then we had to finish it, and I had to like pause it if somebody went to the bathroom. So it was like, no, you know, it was like, and that was pretty cool. And I went like, well, okay, well, this, maybe we have something here that people are drawn to.
How is that on the creative side? As I've been a person who's shown someone my podcast or shown someone a video I made or a website I made, but like as a game, when you make that, is it hard to like sort of hear people watching and sort of like, I find myself justifying like, oh no, that was when I coughed and you know, you shouldn't listen to that part or whatever. But as a game, as a whole package, what is it like as a creator to sit down with folks who are playing your thing?
Yeah. Well, especially with family, or friends, you're always like, you have to fight the urge. I mean, I'm not good at that. It's just being like, oh, we're fixing that. Or especially when you're making it, when it's done, I don't say, I kind of just don't say anything because there's nothing to say, right? The thing just has to speak for itself. But when you're making it and you're playing it with people, it's like you're constantly like, oh, no, we're fixing that. Or like, oh, no, that's going to be better. Or like, oh, yeah, it's a bug. Don't look at that. No, don't go over there. I don't know. Everything we work on is so collaborative, right? I think that's what it is. Because I was thinking, like, I was about to say, oh, it's sort of like it's a maturing thing where, like, the older you get or, like, the more you do it and the bigger the audience gets, you sort of – but that's not quite right. I don't think that's right. But, like – because I never really felt that way at Telltale, and we had an audience most of the time. And especially when we got to the Walking Dead game, had a massive audience. But that game was such a like a labor of a group that you just know that like Derek Sakai's art direction is going to distract from the garbage that you made. And if he wasn't able to like do his magic on a certain area of the world because we ran out of time, then you know, the acting of Dave Fenoy and my writing or whatever was going to like take the load off. So you're less sort of self-conscious, I guess. This was definitely the most self-conscious project I've ever worked on because like it kind of felt like we're a small team. And the story was pretty personal. And yeah, I didn't really realize that until we'd shipped the game though. Yeah, we would do playtests, and I would just never get feedback on the story. It's like, oh, I like the characters. Or like, oh, I like the dialogue. Or like, oh, I don't like Delilah. That was pretty much the only thing we heard. Is like, oh, the dialogue's great. Or, eh, I don't really like Delilah. Or like, oh, I love them. Or like, oh, what's going to, you know. I can't really do anything with that. Then be like, all right. Good. I guess I'll just keep going. You know, there was no like stop and retool this, which you'll get from certain playtesters. I never really thought about it. And then we shipped it. And that launch week was really tough because it was like sort of the wallop of like, oh my God, everyone's playing this. And it was three days before launch. I was talking to Todd Martins of the LA Times, and he had just played the game and just dug into the themes really hard. And I went like, oh my God, like what have I done? What have I shared? Like what have I made people do? Like the wife is going to get Alzheimer's? Are you serious? You know, that's not a spoiler, by the way. That's like in the first 5 minutes of the game. So that's when I kind of went like, oh no, I got really insecure about it. But at that point, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't like go on Twitter and be like, everybody listen, there's some stuff in this game that's good and some stuff in this game that's bad, but just so we're all clear. Like I couldn't caveat it at that stage. Yeah. It was like, God, you know.
Yeah, you don't really see Steven Spielberg coming out and saying that, you know, with his movies.
Just probably like, should sometimes, though.
Yeah, he's probably just like, walk like, out there.
War Horse comes out on Friday. It's not my best work. But I'm Steven Spielberg, so...
You're going to see it anyway.
You know. So, yeah.
Yeah. Can't take DVD that away. Yeah.
That article is from Walking Dead to Walking Dread, which is kind of a nice like title.
I know, and I remember... that headline. Yeah. I was like, just sort of like, oh, come on. Like, are you serious with this? Yeah. I will say it was one of the more unique puns, or I guess you would, yeah, that had been used, because Firewatch just sort of like lends itself to getting a cheeky headline really fast. You know, it's like, had it been the game been bad, you know, it could have been, you know, who knows?
Yeah,
you know?
You play with the word burnt probably a couple times or
No. It just would have been, it could have been real bad. Yeah.
So you mentioned the game is like very personal, like, and in researching it for today, it was just like, you really wanted to be in a national wilderness, like a forest, the Shoshone National Forest. Is that because of, was it hunting trips with your dad? Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up like 25 miles from the National Forest, I guess. It starts about 20, maybe 22 miles if we're going to be whatever, like really close. So it was just a place that I had a lot of love for and still have a lot of love for and have a lot of just sort of like, I go back there and I get like really emotional. I'm like, because it's just like all these memories of being out there, you know, both with like my dad, with my friends, alone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, from basically age 10 till when I went to college.
Can you describe the isolation? Is the isolation in the game sort of like what you wanted to carry? Is it the same thing that you had?
Or? Yeah, I don't know. Like, I can't tell if it's the same. Yeah. It's an approximation, but I don't have a very good like emotional barometer because of the making of it. Mm-hmm. like at this stage when I it's funny as I really like playing Firewatch, which is kind of rare for ever working on a game, but I'm just more taken by like everyone else's craft. I'll see like, oh my God, like Jane, like, oh my gosh, how did you do this? You know, like Chris, how did you like, oh, perfect. Like, you know, I'm just like really taken by everyone else's work. So I can't, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. It feels like someone would have to like sort of experience both as a, whatever, as a, I don't know what the word is, visitor,
right.
You know, customer slash visitor, and then go like, yeah, that felt right. Cause I don't know, but, it definitely wasn't wrong. I just don't know if it's the whole, you know, I just don't know. Yeah.
Okay. I guess I'm asking cause like I'm, my idea of camping is like a motel pretty much. So I just, so going out to a forest is,
not yeah, the game's kind of like that. yeah. Depends. When I go out in the woods in Wyoming, you are like alone. You are really, really, really alone. Like there is just there's only four, maybe half a million people in the entire state. Like the population density is a whole number. I mean, you can go half an hour out of town, and if something bad happens to you, they're not even gonna find you. Like people are just gonna, you're just dead, you're gone. You were just deleted. So that feeling is really, really intense. And I think it gets to people who do go experience it as an adult. It's really exciting to me having experienced it as a kid, so I'm not afraid of it. But it was funny. Last I was out there when we were working on the game, and I went out into the like where whatever. I just like went up, not even like far off the main road. I hiked in maybe like a mile. To get some audio reference. I was with my mom, actually, which is weird. My mom isn't really an outdoors person, but I was like, oh, come with me, it'll be fun. And we kind of got like, we were coming back, and we were on the trail, and there was just a bison on the trail. And I went like, oh. And he was like, he was not stoked that we had come over this hill. My mom starts freaking out and hyperventilating, because they're like, they'll mess you up. They weigh like 2,500 pounds, they're enormous. And I felt fear. And it was funny because I hadn't really felt fear in the wild, in like outdoors ever. And I was like, man, California's making me soft. Like, I was like, California finally did it. I went like, wow, like something, like I had to think like, okay, how do I handle this situation? Because if I don't handle it appropriately, someone's going to get hurt. And like for sure. And that was a really interesting feeling. And I don't think the game isn't really about that. The game doesn't really approximate the physical danger. But it does. It was a hope that it would approximate what it felt like to just sort of like walk around and be with yourself, because that was definitely an experience that I was a bulk of my experiences growing up.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I found sort of at first was kind of disappointed in the game, is like sort of feeling like, oh, I can't really die, or like, you know, that like we're talking about the different genres of games, and you kind of like, oh, I can't actually fall off this cliff per se or whatever, you know, just, and, but then,
oh, you can. And then it's a game breaking bug. And then we get thinking about it and it sucks. And I go, oh, no,
that's one of those moments.
Yeah. I go, oh, can the game is a fact. You have died. Basically.
Yeah.
You just become, the dude from 127 hours.
right.
Yeah.
But then recognizing over time, no, it's like that, actually, this is fun. You know, it, like there's that part of me that's like wants it to be like another game, just like we were talking about earlier, put it in a certain box and keep it there, right? And then, but enjoying the experience. And coming from where I live in Canada, wilderness is pretty nearby or whatever. And but still like enjoying the video game and the aloneness, and you did a great job of capturing that, I think, and just like distance from humanity anywhere, and the fear of what could happen if, right, and that kind of stuff, and I know, yeah, getting into like the towers, that you, the experience of being in a tower and being on your own and that kind of thing is just like, yeah, totally captured so well in the game, I think. And a friend of mine actually just went, just like a couple weeks ago, she went to actually an old Firewatch station in Oregon somewhere.
Oh, cool.
And I was like, I saw her tweet a picture of it, and it was like, for a second, my brain was like, you're in the game. Like, you're, because it was totally exactly like what you guys did. And I was like, you have to play this game. And she's like, it was just so amazing how this experience that she was having was like exactly what I had just, you know, I felt like I had gone through because I had played this game, even though I hadn't actually been anywhere near a actual firearm station.
Yeah. Jane and Ollie just like nailed it. It was really, the moment we never really had. So this happens a lot, especially in first person games. You have these like weird scale issues where you're like, this doesn't feel right. Like, why is that door so tall? Or like, why is this, that doesn't feel, I feel so small and insignificant like that, but like not in a good way. And we just never really had that on Firewatch. We probably definitely did. I just never experienced it. I'm sure it was like the blight of Janing, who I keep referring to as like a 3D artist in the game. I'm sure it was like every day of her life for 2 years. But I remember when the tower first went up on the hill and I went, oh, like that just feels like what it is. Because we'd been to a few, and it just felt what it was, like it was. And that was a pretty great moment. And even being inside of it felt like what being inside of it was. And that just made all, it's like when people are doing that stuff well, when you're such a small team and you're seeing it as you go, it just makes everyone else get way better at their jobs, right? Because it's like, oh, now I know how to, like, I know what Henry sounds like in the space because I can go into the space and talk to myself. I can go in, I can walk around the tower and just sort of like talk to myself for like half an hour and just be in there in the game and go, oh yeah, like, okay, this is the way Henry just, this is the energy level he has when he's in this space versus like, then I go for a walk in the game and I go, oh, this is the energy level he has out here. Like they're different. I don't know how to describe it, but they're different. So we direct differently and I write differently and everything.
Right. Yeah. So like, that's one thing that I didn't want to say, like we saw that photo of you and the team at a tower. So mm-hmm. like, was that just one big outing or did you guys go back over and over again?
We did individual trips. That was the one big team outing to Yosemite, mm-hmm. and which is very different than Wyoming, but it was the closest we could get. Then we did individual trips. Like I did my Wyoming trip. I know Jake did some hikes into Lookout Towers. We'd actually planned to stay in one, but we booked it at a bad time, and then we ended up not doing it. I know Will went to a couple Lookout Towers. So it just kind of became a thing that if you were on a trip and there was one, you probably had to go hike up to it. And then there's one actually 20 miles north of San Francisco where I am right now. That looks over like all of Marin County, and it's a weird municipal lookout tower. And I've been up to that one a bunch. I like ride my motorcycle up there and stuff. So I don't think we did any other big team trips for that sort of purpose, but that was like, I think that was 3 days in Yosemite, maybe more, 3 days. But that was great because like Ollie Moss had never been anywhere like that. He'd only sort of been out in like the rolling hills of England. He just never experienced anything like the American West. And I think that was, because when you're up on that, the lookout tower that's on the photograph on the blog, like you can just see forever. You can see, I don't know how like scientifically possible, how far it is to possibly see, but it just seems like you could see like hundreds of miles. You could just see forever. And there's not a lot of places in England where you can get up high enough to see hundreds of miles without just seeing all of England, you know, not just being like, there's one coast, there is the other, you know, like, so I think he was like, all right, okay, I understand.
And so, you know, Ollie Moss is just a well-known talent before the game, and so I think, and I think it's so awesome that he was part of this game, because it was just to be able to interpret his work into a 3D was what Jane was tasked with doing. I thought it was just it's just a fantastic game, just visually looking at it. If you just take away the story and whatnot, and I felt like they did, you know, she and them just together, just work together. It's just a beautiful game.
Yeah. Yeah, they had like Jane has a really uncanny ability to capture how something feels and make it in 3D without, man, I almost used the word, I almost said she can like, she doesn't, what is it, see the forest for the trees?
Oh, maybe, right.
Okay. For readers at home, I just did double gun suicide in my head. Like, ugh.
The episode title, I guess.
Yeah, she doesn't sort of get, she doesn't get myopic about the work she does. So she just focuses on what things feel like in a way that's really, really splendid and really amazing. And then we had a graphics programmer named Paolo and another graphics programmer, just sort of like programmer general named Ben. And they're just really smart about building tools that people like Ollie can use. Like Ollie had never done a game before, but was able to go in and like light a bunch of the game and do color correction on all the game. And he could just use the tools that he knew how to use, and use a little dashboard and use Photoshop. And that all just kind of came together really nicely. So yeah, they're really good. I don't know what to say. They're just like awesome. Just like the best people in the world. So
yeah. So I thought that was, I think it's just great. So if, cause Ollie's, I just, for people, I guess before the game, they might know him best from the Star Wars, triptych posters. I guess that's his.
Oh yeah, he would love. He loves to be known for that.
No, really does.
No, not really. It's sort of those things where he's just like, I'll never, ever, ever outlive. Like, I'll never get. You know what I mean? It's like he peaked too early.
Oh man.
Yeah, no. I mean, Ollie's been he's an illustrator. Lives in England. He had done lots of pop culture work, including those Star Wars posters that like basically burned down the internet. That are thousands upon thousands of, you can buy a good, like a good used car for on eBay for cheaper than you can buy his posters on eBay. Those posters, at least.
Pretty much.
He just liked games, and he and Jake were friends on AOL Instant Messenger because Ollie liked Sam and Max, I think, or something. And we went over to London and met him. He doesn't live in London, but we met him in London and, yeah, we just like became fast friends. So he was looking to just do something different for a while, and we're like, well, let me tell you, let me show what making games is like. It's a real I don't know, vacation from whatever you've been doing. And I think by the time he was done, he was like, okay, I'll take a break from video games for a minute. Maybe not. I think he might still work in games, but by the end he was like, all right, I get it.
I think I saw his tweet, like his Twitter stream. He's like, I'm going to go back to making something every day, like some sort of sketching or whatever, some piece of artwork.
Yeah. Game development's really tough like that. Game development is, you kind of hit this like this trough, and a lot of, I guess, startups experience it or whatever, where you just hit this. It's like if you were building a house, but you had to build all the material, make all the materials offsite. And then you were just going to show up with like all the everything at like the last month and put it all there. So, but your emotional marker for building the house is just staring at the slab of concrete. And every day you come in and you're just like, great, nothing, like there's nothing on the slab of concrete. But meanwhile, like the game is just getting made everywhere all the time. And then boop, boop, you know, it comes up and comes together and you go, oh my God. Okay, we have a game. But for someone like, especially Ollie, who can lock himself in a room with nothing but his like Cintiq and produce a piece of finished, like absolutely in his eyes, complete work, and just get it made on, like get it screen printed, put it up online, whatever. That process is really hard. I suspect it's hard for me, and that sort of that emotional part of, here's everything we have left to do, and here's the nothing we have done. But you've done a ton. You're doing a lot. It's just not. It's, you don't get that feedback loop of completion of like, yeah, you did it. Good work. Like, great. That, and you know, part of just game development is getting comfortable with that feeling of just like staring into the abyss and going like, all right, fine. Like it'll be fine. But at the same time, having a little voice in your head that goes like, all right, well, if it's, we're 15 months now and we don't have anything more than the first day of the game, like really, is it going to be fine? Like, when do you actually stop tricking yourself? You know, otherwise, you know, like people wonder how a game is in development for like 8 years, and it's just because it can be. Like, it just, you can just allow it. It's like being in like a bad relationship or something. You can just let it keep happening, because like, why, like, do you know how hard it would be to like end this? So
this is the last, we're pretty, you're gonna make, yeah, right? So, sounds like
we're done. That's it. I have a Firewatch. We're out. No. I'm not doing anything. I'm just thinking about getting into gardening. Yeah. we're gonna work on something else. We all, I think Jake and I especially, are getting a little antsy We have a little bit more Firewatch stuff we want to do. So there'll be like, we'll announce some stuff when we feel like it.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. You actually did hear it here first, like for sure. You've definitely heard this here first.
It's more than just the co-op multiplayer stuff you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Oh, way more than that. Ranked matchmaking, please. My Firewatch MMR is going to be sick.
The Firewatch Royale game is awesome.
Yeah, so. we were gonna do like a Heroes of the Storm thing where we brought every character from the Campo Santo library out for like a 5-on-5 MOBA, but then it was just like Henry, Delilah, a couple teens, and like that was it. And so we couldn't really do it. We got to make some more games before we can make the Blizzard style MOBA. But we will do a pure Hearthstone ripoff that's just like card game or your heart is broken, you experience tremendous loss, and then your will to live just goes to zero and the first person who can't handle it. So we have a couple things we want to do, and then but at the same time we're kicking around ideas for a new thing. And we don't really know how to now we're learning a whole new thing, which is like, how do we exist as a real game studio? You know, on Firewatch it was, how do you make a company? But even then it kind of felt like baby's first company. It felt like the Fisher Price version of a real company. And then how do you make your first game? And like, how do you use Unity? And like, nobody had used Unity before to make a video game. This is James, the animator. He made Ori, and Ori was in Unity. So
how'd that
one
feel like?
Out of 10 had used Unity. You know, so now we're like, okay, how do we exist as a real company? How do we hire people? How do we Firewatch was conceived like in my living room with Jake at first as my roommate, and then eventually Nels and Ollie, and then Will and Jane. But just sort of like before we had my office, we were just like hang out in my living room. How do we do it now? I don't know. Like, we have an idea, but like maybe or two or three. Everyone has an idea. Like I, you know, but like how do we start? So we're trying to figure that out right now.
I do want to go back to Firewatch just a little bit. I just want to talk about the voices for the characters, and especially for Henry. Mm-hmm. And you noticed, and then researching it, you said that you tested 50 people before the role.
Maybe,
is that right?
Maybe more. Like it was countless. It was dire. It was a real situation. It was a dire situation. Yeah. It was bad. It was like being like, it was like dating. It was just like, what's wrong with me? Like, now, like, eventually you say no to so many people. You're like, okay, this is me. This is about me. Yeah. I can't find this person.
Right. Do you think at one point, like, you should be the voice actor? Okay.
No, and I'll tell you why. Because I can, like, acting is, like, really hard. Yeah. Acting is like painting or playing the guitar or something. Except the acting, kind of similar to writing, is that everybody thinks they can do it because it's like, I could do that. I have a personality. I can do whatever. In the writing, it's like, everyone can. I'm literate. I can write. They're very similar in that a lot of people think they can do them who can't. No, because I did the voice for our Scratch audio for our original prototype, and I was basically had to throw – we had to throw – we didn't because people actually used it to build systems, but that entire project – I think it was called Unity Gray Forest, named after the asset pack we downloaded to learn how to use Unity. It's called Gray Forest is what it was called, .unity. Yeah. It was useless to me because I would go in there and I would hit play and it was just like, okay, I can't listen to this. It's like, it's nothing. It was torturous. It was really bad. So no. I didn't know what we were going to do. I mean, eventually we just would have gone back to the pile of 50 and been like, all right, somebody's in here. We'll just get somebody and go forward. But luckily I'd had that experience because I had cast and voice directed on The Walking Dead, along with writing and designing with Jake. So I'd been through it before. I knew it took a lot of time. I knew it took getting the right person. And I had cast the wrong person for Lee Everett before. And we recorded all of episode one of The Walking Dead with a different guy then built it. And it was bad. And then we had to find Dave Fennoy. So I was like, don't do that. It's one of those things where if you don't cast the right person, every day you work on the game, it's harder than it should be. And then when you cast the right person, everything gets easier. writing the game was just like, the hardest part was plot and scripting and logic, like all the different options. But like, actually what Henry says was just like easy, because I knew who he was because Rich had brought him to life. Mm. So yeah.
And that's it's Rich Sommer from, it took me a while to figure out who he was in Mad Men. Cause I was playing the game. I was just like, his voice is really familiar. And then
he is Harry Crane on Mad Men.
Yeah.
The TV guy.
Yeah, and it took me a while to figure out who he was in Mad Men, because I was like, in my brain, I was like going through, like, he's just, took me forever to figure it out. And then I didn't think his voice would be ideal for this game. The person I was thinking who he was wasn't that voice. But then when you're listening to him as he goes to the game, it's like he brings just a lot of nuance to the.
Yeah.
And
he is like an amazing actor. It's funny. There's sort of like two types of really of amazing actors I've found. One is there's the amazing actor who knows they're amazing and then just is a sort of like a cool dude about it. And then there's the amazing actor who just kind of like shits on himself all the time and until he gets in the studio and then he's just on, and that's Rich. Like Rich is just like, I'm the worst. And then you're working with him and he's just locked in. He is like locked in. It's amazing. It was a really... it was a real good experience for me, because I was really nervous at the beginning because he was shooting the season finale of Mad Men, and then the next day he would be on Firewatch. So I knew that the day before, like Matt Weiner had been sitting down with him, being like, "This is what the scene is about. This is what's happening. This is what you're feeling," and like working with him as a real director. And then he gets this guy, this fucking chump. Sorry, I'm not supposed to swear again. This chump. So that was really, but that was quickly dismissed that, because I realized that if I was nervous, I wasn't going to do my job. And I think it ended up working for the game, because everyone, including myself, is like that day one when we record in order, which I don't know if we would do again, but it made sense for Firewatch. Everyone is tentative. Like Henry's feeling out Delilah, and Delilah's feeling out Henry, and I'm feeling out the actor. So everyone's a little tentative, and I think that really worked in the direction. Yeah, Rich is just so good. And he's one of these guys that he just kind of crops up in a lot of stuff, too. He's starting to... Especially now that he's like got enough distance between him and Mad Men, and he just knows everyone. He's like one of those LA guys who just kind of is friends with everybody.
Yeah.
So like when he was just in New York doing a play with Ed Harris for like 4 months, and while he was out there, he shot like one of the like interstitial sketches for Last Week Tonight. So I'm like watching Last Week Tonight. I'm like, hey, here's Ryan, buddy. Like, you know, and he has an incredible range. I'm really excited to see him in more stuff. I would love to see him in like a really meaty role on screen. I would love that. He's just so good. Yeah.
So what did you like? He had like 50 people. What did he do that like you felt like that made him stick out? Because you're like in, it sounded like they were in a middle of panic mode. But what about his audition? Did you say like, oh yes, him?
So this is what happens. This is a good thing for all aspiring voice actors. I get 15 auditions from an agency, right? And, they show up as WAV files and I open it up and, I'm trying to think of a good opening line. Like a good line. Let's say the first line, let's say the whole script is about, the opening of the day zero. He's like, hello, I'm here now. And then she says, by the way, as I repeat it to you, I'm just going to, I will repeat it with the same up and down as in the game, because it's just burned into my brain. And Delilah goes, it's Henry, right? And he says, it's Delilah. Like, yeah, that's what the guy said on the phone. It's Henry, right? I'm Delilah. Yeah, that's what the guy said on the phone. So what's wrong with you? That's how it opens. That's how the game opens. And I sit there with the WAV files. This is going to be really hard for me to act because I have Rich's read in my brain. And I hit the first one and it goes like, hello, I'm here now. And I'm like, nope. Like literally this is a 50 line script I've given them, or 20 line script. And it's like, nope. And then because what happens is I hit the next one. Hello, I'm here now. Hello, I'm here now. Hello, I'm here now. And this is different people, right? And they're all the same. They all just go, I have a spot where I know to go. I'm a voice actor. Like I've done a bajillion games, so I know, like, I just go, it's like they put it in fourth gear and are just like cruising down the freeway going through it, and you can just go through a box of reads and they're all the same. They're literally 20 people and they are 20 identical people, and they can be different ages, races, everything. Like, it doesn't matter. They're all reading it the same way. Riches comes along and he's got like, you know, I hit play and he's like, hello, I'm here now. And I'm like, okay, now I'm just like, okay, wait, this is real. You know, you just sort of, it grabs you because you go, it's different. They're all like identical. And then it's just like, this is a different one. You go, okay, wait, this guy's doing something different. And just the fact that he's doing something different has mean he's made a choice, you know? That's huge. You have to make choices both as a, like, in all, as any creator, you just have to make choices. And I think like when you play a game that feels, doesn't really land, you know, like everyone kind of like crapped on Destiny at the beginning. Remember? I mean, people love Destiny now, but people crapped on it from like the moon, the wizard, that crap. It's because like nobody made any choices. It was just like everything. It was just stuff, you know? Yeah. And if the choices they were making were generic, they weren't specific. But, you know, Rich made all these specific choices in the read, and it wasn't stuff like, and sometimes I'm like, okay, I probably would have, but like, that's great. Cause like, if I don't like it, I just go, I know if I was in the studio, I would go, oh, hey, when you zigged, I need you to zag. Try zagging, you know? Or like, hey, it seems like you think you're supposed to be, it seems like you're feeling really, you're playing it like you're feeling really nervous, but I want you to play it like you're really tired, like you just had a really bad day. And he's like, oh, okay. And then he goes, and he goes a different way. But because he had made the choice to play it, oh, I'm going to play it like I feel like I'm nervous or like that I'm scared of this person, I knew that he was capable of making any choice, so he just chose that one. But there's no way that he should know that coming off some sides that he gets in the email.
So I was gonna say, when you're hearing this, is it labeled like Rich Sommer, a guy from Mad Men, or is it just like generic voice so you don't have that face?
Oh no, I knew it was Rich. Oh, yeah, okay. I knew because we asked him personally. We asked him over Twitter because he followed a board game blog that Patrick Ewing, who's a programmer at Campo, created. So I was like, the moment he got followed by Rich Sommer, I was like, wait, that guy from Mad Men follows you, right? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, that means you can DM him, right? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, I'll DM him and see if he wants to do this. And then he emailed me right back, and then we got on the phone, and
nice.
He's like, I'm really interested. He had played The Walking Dead. That always really helps, you know, and liked The Walking Dead. And he's like, I'm super interested. We'll do it. Like, I don't care what my agent says. Like, let's figure out a way to do it. And I was like, do you want to read the script or anything? And he's like, no, it'll be fun. Let's do this. And he was just so down from the beginning. And the same with Sissy. Like, they were just like down. And when you're working on an indie game and you're working on your first game, that's what you need. Like, you know, we at all levels, like, either you're down, like, or you're not, you know? I mean, when we were hiring, it was like, this is what we can afford to pay you. This is what will happen if the game is successful, because you'll get like royalties forever. Like, basically everyone on the team gets like a little royalty. But we're making an indie game, and it's probably not going to happen. So you're probably gonna be out of a job in 2 years. Are you in or are you out? And then people will be like, well, I want a little bit more. I want a little bit this. It's like, sorry, like you're pick one. And to everyone's credit at Campo, every single person on the team was just like, yeah, let's do this. Like, we're in. And I think that confidence to say, yeah, let's do this is twofold. Like, one is it meant that we were kind of onto something in terms of the creative, which was really, like, really helps, because I was really I always thought it was bad. And then also it just means that the people who are saying yes have enough confidence in themselves that if everything explodes, they're just going to be able to, they'll be fine. They'll be able to find work, you know? So, you know, I think that was a very common thread for everyone who came to work on the game, Rich and Sissy included.
You worked, as you said, like, you're working on an independent team. What lessons do you wish you had known, like, now you put the game out, put Firewatch out, like, what lessons, like, I guess, life lessons, if you will, or whatnot, like, from going from working for another company to working as an independent studio, you'd known before you started?
I mean, there's like a million. There's just so many things. We didn't mess up. That was we got really, like, Jake and I we talk all the time, but we would kind of like make sure we always have like one good chat a week. We're just sort of talking about like, you live in these like 1 week or 2 week increments when you're working in game development. And then, you know, it's kind of our job to be thinking and talking about like the next month, 2 months, next year. So we would always sort of be like, we have I caught myself. I'm almost sorry. we haven't messed up yet. You know, there's like no blunder. We haven't made our first blunder yet. We kind of got lucky. We made a couple blunders that then got like accidentally fixed. We're like, oh my God, that could have been so bad. You just didn't, you know what I mean? It's like when you come home and like your stove has been on, you're like, oh my God, all my things could be gone. The cats would be toast. Oh my goodness. But everything's fine. Don't ever do that again. That happened a couple of times. Mostly that I don't have to do everything. Cause I was like trying to run the company, trying to do the books, trying to do everything. And that, cause I was so worried about money. I was just so worried. We had we had enough money to make the game because we had asked the guys at Panic for enough money to make the game, but we had enough money to make the game and nothing else, you know? So I was always so reticent to just be like, let's bring this person on and help me with this or whatever. And now, I mean, it's sort of like a luxury that I now can, because the game is done well, that I can go, oh, we're going to bring this person on and take a load off. We're going to bring this person on to help Jake out with this. Or we're going to hire, you know, an artist who's made UI, because Jake does all the UI. And I'm like, I don't care. We're going to wait 6 months and we have the greatest candidate in the world. We're going to say, let's just wait and see if we can find somebody who also wants to do UI. Stuff like that. Not that we would do that per se, but that was probably the big thing, is sort of taking stuff off my plate and asking for help. I've always been good at asking for help, like asking for opinions and stuff. And like, I call like advisors and like people who have, like Amir is a good example. I've always been good at, I think we've always been really fortunate to have those resources, but there's lots of like process stuff. You know, we just had our Firewatch postmortem that was a full day. And the way we run those, it was really smart. It was came up by, again, this guy, Patrick, who works at the studio, and he came from Twitter, and they're always like doing this sort of stuff, like process stuff. And we don't do like a discipline by discipline kind of like complaining session. We do, everyone in the studio gets 3 colors of sticky notes. It sounds kind of crappy and bureaucratic, but it really works. And one is stuff that you should keep doing that we did on Firewatch, or we discovered on Firewatch, we definitely got to keep doing. Then there's stuff that we did on Firewatch and we should stop doing, or we did and stopped and just remind ourselves to never do that again. And then there's stuff we should start doing that is an idea that we should do. And you just write them down for like half an hour or an hour. And you get a little little stacks. And then someone, Aaron, who's like our office manager / Aaron's the glue. She just sort of makes stuff happen now. She took them all, and she hadn't worked on the game. She came on after the game shipped. She took them all and just sort of put them up on this wall in a like group by discipline. So it's like, okay, here's all the like event system stuff. Here's all the production stuff. Here's the communication stuff. Here's the QA. Here's this. And then we just start with a big cluster. We pull them down off the wall and it's like, keep doing this, stop doing this. And we read them all. And then we kind of put them all back. And then we pluck one that seems sort of like meaty or like incisive. And it's like, stop using blank for task tracking. And now we have a discussion about it, you know, we just sort of go through them. But what's nice is at the end of this postmortem, we have only actionable items, stuff to stop, start, and keep doing. We don't have like the list of hurt feelings about how Jake called me a butthole a lot, you know, and now I'm mad about it that Jake doesn't call me a butthole that much. He calls me things that are much worse.
Bleepable things.
Oh, yeah. Like bleepable, like in a real way. Bleepable, like in like if somebody was walking by the studio, they'd be like, they would call the police. It sounds like we're having a domestic.
For scale, I guess, how many folks would be sitting in on a postmortem like that that worked on the game or were, you know, tangentially involved in somehow in the game?
So the game had like 10 full timers on it. 9 of those were devs, and then we had probably 12 people total touch the code base because we had people come in for like 6 to 9 months on like our VFX guy came in for 8 months and just like did all the sort of like smoke and dirt and like butterflies and things in the game. And he was awesome. And so the postmortem, I think we had, let's see, Ollie wasn't there, and then one of our programmers had moved on to a new job. So I think we had 9 people there, 8 people there. So try to be the whole studio, you know, more or less. Yeah.
Because I would guess most people would think maybe it's like equate it with like sort of Electronic Arts or this big studio idea, like tons of people touching this thing. But knowing that it's like individuals and like under 20 or whatever total, you know, is a testament, I think, to how well the game came out and the amount of, but also the amount of sweat and work you guys had to do just to get it out the door and stay true to your vision of what it was going to be. Because I'm sure there was moments of like, what are we doing? And we should probably stop now because where are we going? Kind of with this when you're.
Yeah, the vision ends up just being more of a feeling. You know, we try to like, we obviously have a feature set and stuff you want to accomplish and like stuff that you think is enough to make a good game. But stuff can quickly come off that list if it's like not copacetic with the tone and feeling of what we're trying to accomplish, what we're trying to make. And a lot of that is we're discovering along the way because, again, it's like a genreless game or it's a game without a like. Very strong core genre. It's not that it's genreless, but it's easy to. The thing about what we found actually was that, and this is something I probably harp on too much, because everyone was really experienced and very smart, there was a lot of like hypothetical game design where it's like, we can't do that because if we do that, then this is going to happen. We got to do this and this and this and this. This isn't going to work and this is going to work and this isn't going to work and this is going to work. And it's just like an hour goes by and 2 hours go by and you're like, you could have just made the thing and found out. So we're trying to be a little more disciplined in that regard. You know, and I think that's something that like new devs, like it's a huge competitive advantage. Like you just make stuff because you don't know and you're probably going to discover something that we would never discover because we're a little bit set in our ways. So
yeah, so the intro for the game was like, it's all text. And I felt like, was that just a very conscious choice to do that? And because I felt like a lot of visual gamers would kind of just blow by that real fast and just try to get to some visual stuff. Is that, because there's a lot of emotional weight of the choices that people are making before you even see like, you know, the forest, you know? So it's,
yeah, that opening is the whole like kit and caboodle of the game. Like if you that also is actually pretty good in my opinion because, that was a really arrogant thing to say. But, like it works really.
Yeah.
It accomplishes something that I am happy about. That I was not the reason we put it in the game. We put it in the game because we liked it and like it was one of the. I had written that choose your own adventure basically in Twine to communicate to the team like what. Who Henry was, and it was like internal eyes only, and then we started thinking like, oh, like maybe this is usable. I think it was, I don't know. It doesn't. I always want to say it was Chris Remo that had the idea, but can't remember. It was pretty early. It's like, oh yeah, we should just put this in the game, and this is just maybe it was even earlier than that. Yeah, I think it was really really early because we were trying to design the first 5 minutes of the game because that's really really important. You know, you get that first 5 minutes and you have, you know, that's where you're going to like bring people, like latch onto people. Like people are going to give your game 5 minutes. Like people like technically give your game 10 or 15 minutes because they bought it, but their hearts are going to give it like five. Mm-hmm. And then if every minute after five, they're going to be like, okay, I'm going to wait for this to get good. Unless it's Metal Gear and then they'll just give you 2 hours or whatever, watch it, or Final Fantasy, whatever. They'll just, because people, but again, those are series. As people understand what they're getting, that they have expectations. So anyway, the thing about the opening, which we call internally the Twine, but I guess it's the prologue. The prologue of the game where you're making choices over text, and then it's intercut with first person exploration stuff. It's us saying also, and I realize this later, if you don't like this, like this is not your game. Like this is just not for you. And that's okay. It's just for some other people. So luckily on Steam, you can get a refund. and I think the game is, like I said, we marketed it as a story experience and art and characters and first, because we didn't know how to tell you what it was. And, we did a lot of like, there's stuff in the trailers that isn't in the game, like big time. Yeah, like the whole but that's because like if I show you the version that's in the game, you're not going to have context because it's really nuanced. So in a trailer, we got to kind of like do the trailer version of the moment that makes you go, oh no, you know, like the moment in the game, the moment in the trailer that we showed at E3 with Sony. Like he grabs the wire, which is on day two of the game. And then she says, you know, if you're not in your tower, who is? And then he whips around and he looks at his tower, not in the game.
That was the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like something like that happens in the game. So we wanted, like, we couldn't just show you it where we wanted to put it, because where we knew it was better in the game, we knew it was way better where we had it. But we couldn't show it to you there as designed because it was weird. It was just like, it was a really like, you're not, there's nothing to really look at when it happens. It just, it's all audio almost. It's a very audio forward scene, I should say, but we're showing this trailer in the LA sports arena, you know, where they like had the Olympics. So it's like, it's going to be huge. I got to like, it has to be visual. So we're just like, screw it. We'll just do it though. Right. We'll just do it the way it should be in there. And then we'll just change it in the game if we want to, like, who cares?
Yeah.
Apparently you did, but sorry.
I don't want a refund for it. I'm not.
But I think, yeah, so we can do whatever with the marketing, you know, and obviously you have to be honest about your game and you have to like sell it for what it is. But when you start the game, we were always really confident that like, we didn't want the game to like pretend to be something it wasn't from the moment it started. So,
which I think that's, I was going to say with the intro, the way you did it as a gamer person, I think I was overthinking. I want to go back and just play the game through now that I'm like, kind of like relaxed and not trying to figure out what I'm doing, but it felt like I was trying to analyze it like, okay, is this a loading screen or is this because my Mac at the time actually was really slow, and so I was like, okay,
yeah,
now I have a faster Mac, but okay. Or is it like a, you know, a game introduction and explaining the mechanics of how this game is going to work, which I guess you could say partially is, but it's good to hear, I guess, that it's like story first and other stuff kind of.
Well, I mean, you learn how to do everything you need to do in the game, but in that section, you know, it's like, you're going to walk, you're going to open stuff, you're going to climb over stuff, you're going to pick up this radio, you're going to make dialogue choices. You're going to, the only thing we don't teach you to do, which we then do on the morning of day one, is look at something and radio about it, is like the target situation, which is the most complex mechanic in the game for a non-gamer, because it's almost like a shooter. You have to like look at something and put it in your reticle and then pull a trigger and then you get a context, you get stuff to talk about. So, but we tried to like very, very smoothly make sure by the time you picked up the radio, there wasn't a whole lot more to learn about how to be in this world. So it was nice to sort of have this like layered experience of learning how to be Henry and learning who Henry was at the same time. That was very conscious. That was a very conscious choice.
I think so. About the game, I would just say, I think it's a unique jewel of a game. And again, I'm not sure how much weight that will be because I'm not a gamer, but it's a very good compliment I'm trying to give you.
I appreciate it.
And
if it was 1997, I would play Jewel the game about living.
Yeah. But I was telling Chris,
becoming a pop star. Sorry, go ahead.
I was telling Chris before you came in, I was like, I'm really excited because, you know, if you were to make 5 more of these types of games, like not the same type, but a game, but 5 different unique games, I think you just, that used to be an amazing game studio you would have.
If we get to make 5 more games as a game studio, I'm going to be really, really excited about what we will have done in my career, because that will be about, I think I'm 31, I got 5 games, that seems like takes 2 years each. I'm going to have literally nothing to say in my 40s because I'll be like completely burned out.
Yeah.
So if we can do five, then we're going to, that would be really incredible. So thank you for putting that energy out into the world. We'll try to
live up to Christopher's expectations.
Just leave up to my expectations. That's all I ask.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Good. That's like good vibes though. That's like good. If that energy is out there, that energy is floating around, that there is a desire for 5. The problem is, what if we want to make a 6th game and then like it's like a monkey's paw. And
just remember, like, what did Chris say? 5 games or 6 games? Like,
The ghost we of go, Christopher.
The day after the 5th game, we go to the studio and it's just burned to the ground.
Yeah. Oh man, should listen to that guy.
Yeah. I guess we'll make no more.
I want to just ask as a bit of a segue into a less serious topic, maybe, but the podcast that you guys do and the podcast network sort of sorts you guys have, what's there's kind of this, like, podcasting now is really popular, obviously, but
it's all the rage.
Yeah, everybody has a podcast,
and Snapchat and podcasting.
Yeah, so
sorry.
That's my two niches. But like in my mind, I'm still like successful professional people don't podcast. It's kind of how I like now celebrities are starting to do it and stuff like as a thing. But like,
what do you mean successful professional people don't podcast?
I'm Bill Simmons.
fill out the Bill Simmons's like
I don't know
contract he designed.
I know now they do. Yeah. But it's just so fun, like to see somebody like you're owning Campo Santo and you know whatever, and like but you talk a lot of times and obviously you play a lot of games and which is, you know, naturally that you would have to obviously. But anyway, I guess just how does like. It's not, I'm not really asking like a time perspective thing, but just knowing what's involved in putting a podcast together and having a few of them that you guys do collectively or whatever. Mm-hmm. How does that fit into the schedule, and how does that sort of kept your creative fires going, I guess, in terms of what you guys do in your day job to have this podcast outlet going?
Well, you'll notice that I haven't been on the podcast much in the past, like 6 months. Yeah, the podcast is called Idle Thumbs, by the way. And then there's the Idle Thumbs Podcast Network. And basically, if you like gaming podcasts, there's at least one thing done by Idle Thumbs that you'll probably like. There's the main show that is currently hosted by Chris Remo, Nick Brecken, and Jake Rodkin. And then every once in a while, I pop up. It used to be Jake, me, and Chris a lot. But we all kind of like, now we just work in the same place all the time. So we're a little like, it's a little stale by the time we all get together. You know, it's like I think I was just like so stressed out working on the game, on working on Firewatch, and also we sit 5 feet away from each other. So it's like all day for 50 hours a week or whatever when we're in development. And it's like, oh, now let's steal 2 hours away and just have other conversations in here. But these are the ones we're going to record, you know. Yeah. And we'd find ourselves like at lunch, which we used to never get lunch together because Chris worked at Double Fine and we worked at Telltale. And when we would do the podcast, it was like, hey man, good to see you. Like, what's going on? If you play this, you play this, you know? Yeah. So that's able to be recreated, I think, because now Nick Brecken, who doesn't work at Campo Santo, can come in. Anyway, there's Idle Thumbs, which is just sort of free flowing conversation about games. Danielle Riendo and Rob Zachney do a podcast called Idle Weekend, which is just a different perspective on the news pretty much, because they're both journalists. What's going on in the gaming news? There's Esports Today that Rob does. It's like a high level esports podcast, and then a long standing podcast that existed as early as Idle Thumbs that we then kind of like merged with. It was a podcast called Three Moves Ahead, which is a strategy games podcast. It's very good. Troy Goodfellow and Rob Zachney host that. It's a Netrunner podcast by Nels. There's a book podcast by Chris and his wife. And then there's weird little ones that pop up. Steve Gaynor from Fulbright, he made Gone Home and is working on a game called Tacoma. Did, after Gone Home completed, he did a 10-episode miniseries called Tone Control that is just sitting down with devs for like an hour and a half and going over their entire body of work and trying to like draw through threads through it. And it's like real people. I mean, it started with Jake and I, so like whatever. But then it's like Ken Levine and Soren Johnson and like Neil Druckmann. It's like, you know, like people it's really interesting to hear their perspectives. So yeah, it's just a platform for us to like do stuff that is not Campo related. It existed before Campo Santo. It'll exist, you know. Chris has really like been able to like start to shape it a lot more because, you know, he was working at Double Fine and doing so much work for them, and then coming over to the studio and like recording Idle Thumbs at the Idle Thumbs studio. But we now have like a dedicated on-site Thumbs studio at Campo Santo that we can use for recording music for the game. We can do podcast stuff in. Erin, she usually does them from home, but she can do her. She's the office manager, but also she was the voice of one of the teens in the lake.
Nice.
She played the Chelsea. She played Snow in The Wolf Among Us. She was in Tales of the Borderlands as one of the main two female leads. Oh, I can't remember. She's just a really accomplished voice actress and like stage actress. So she works at Campo Santo and she can go in there and use of the equipment. So it's a really good situation. And now I feel like Chris, especially, who's sort of like the engine behind Idle Thumbs, can really like continue to shape it as a thing. So, you know, we're all really multidisciplinary is all it really means to me, is that like we all like to just do other stuff. You know, we're all like close at the studio, but at the same time, we all have very varying interests. And the cool thing about Idle Thumbs is that it's become a place where those varying interests can be expressed in an interesting way. Like I always have like two ideas for like mini series I want to do. Oh, I did a podcast series, a series for a while that is like on hiatus called Dota Today. That was like interviews with people in the Dota world, 'cause I like that. But Chris and Jake don't give two bleeps about it, you know? So it's kind of fun that it's like, they're very different, right? Even though they sound like they should be the same, like, because Idle Thumbs doesn't need to support a human life. Campo Santo is an entertainment company, and we have to make products that people buy, or we don't get to work it there anymore, and we have to go work somewhere else. Like, Idle Thumbs is an entertainment company as well, but it's a non-commercial entertainment company. Even though it does make money and has ads and like is self-sustaining, it's very expensive actually to run that many podcasts, believe it or not.
I believe it. I know it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it doesn't have to, I can have, you know, I could decide tomorrow I wanted to do a podcast about any, like,
Super Mario making. Brothers.
Yeah. 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 Super Mario Brothers lunchbox. That's my actual lunchbox from when I was a little one, when I was in the first grade. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. It's just a place where we can do weird stuff. And Campo is that to some extent, because we have the Quarterly Review, which is a literary journal that is completely non-commercial and just like something we think is cool to do. Costs us money to do, because it's a quality piece of writing. It's a quality piece done by Duncan. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like another avenue of expression, I guess is the way to describe it. But it is a lot of work. It is a ton of work. Everything is work. But like, living a full life is work. It's not just going to happen to you. Like, if you want to do stuff, you just got to like get up and do it. Yeah. Even though I don't like to, I like to go. I'm in my house right now, so I like to go in the other room and do nothing, which is my favorite thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's great. I was listening to a couple episodes. I hadn't heard of it before now. Yeah. Before the interview, anyways, and just like, yeah, there's a million. Like we said, everybody has podcasts now, but it's still fun to stumble across, especially like in the gaming world. There's a lot, but a lack of like good discussion from smart, intelligent folks I sometimes find. And so I was, just really enjoyed the random sampling I grabbed anyways, and we'll subscribe to some shows. So
yeah, thank you. Cool. Yeah. I will pass that along to the guys, because Jake and Chris will be very happy about that. They put a lot of love into it.
Well, I think that's a good wrapping up point. One question we always ask towards the end is like, what are you passionate about, or what are you excited about right now?
Besides Firewatch 2, obviously.
Besides Firewatch 2.
That's a good question. What am I passionate about right now? I'm really into documentaries right now. Super into documentaries. I've been watching like basically every single documentary about mountain climbing that exists. I've watched every one of them. I've seen all of them. I'm just sort of like really into like these documentaries where people push themselves to like do. I would never do this. I would never do this. I watched The Summit, which is about an accident on K2. I watched Meru, which is about an accident on Meru. And I was just like, why? Like, I don't like, once you see the photographs are up there, like, I kind of get it. Like, it's a little intoxicating, but I've just been watching a lot of docs. I watched a documentary about ultra marathoners called the Barkley Marathons. It's on Netflix. It's really cool. Like, they're like, all these docs are like, the thing I find interesting that I'm starting to notice about documentaries, because I'm watching way more than I've ever watched before, is that there's not very many good ones. Like, even a documentary that I like, I look at it, I'm like, had some fluff in it, and like, what was that really? Is that about, I was entertained, but like, is that, you know, but I'm really interested in like the great documentary is right now. I'm just sort of interested in the form, and there's just so much more work. Like, it seems like for the individual, right? Like, obviously it's a ton of work to make Iron Man, you know, it's like moving an army, but then it's done. It's like, we're going to shoot for 70 days. We're going to do special effects for 200 days or whatever. And then it's like, boom, 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 boom. But like a doc, you can just get lost in. It's like years of these people's lives, and there's no money in it. And it's just like, if you're making documentary film, you're just like, I would like to be a poor person. I'm signing up for that, please. Even if I win an Oscar, I would like to be poor, please. I really just care about this thing more than I care about making money. And I find that really interesting. I don't know. I find that you just get – it makes the good one feel so interesting. It's such a special discovery, because the person who made this clearly could be making money doing something else, but they made this. And that's just kind of what I'm into right now, I guess. I hadn't realized that until you asked me. Like, I had not said that out loud, other than the fact that like, when I'm like, what was I wish I was doing right now? I wish I was like curled up on my couch, like staring at my like Samsung TV, looking at documentaries on Netflix. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what felt like with designing a murderer. I think it's
Making a Murderer?
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
what, yeah. I watched
it. It took them forever to make it. You know, they're doing something else to make money or whatever to make it, but the design choices, the directing choices, if you will, or the editing choices they made are like substantial to the storytelling, but they just made a really great, compelling, binge-watching, you know, documentary, so it's pretty awesome. So when you find the good one, you know, you're just like, wow, that was amazing. You're just stuck with it. So totally.
Yeah. No, it's like a weird alchemic thing. It's like, it's very, I'm really into it. I don't have anything interesting to say other than what I've said about it. Cause like, I know I'm going to make it like some sort of discovery. I'm like, oh my God, this is the thing about docs. I feel like I'm just a baby.
We should make a documentary about you learning or watching documentaries. And then the discovery at the end, whatever you find.
I'm going to go, and then it's going to cut.
Yeah. Helicopter will come in, take you away, and we won't know the ending. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Oh, man. Soft burn. But anyway.
Yeah. Wrap it all up.
Awesome. So how can people find you on the internet?
They could Google me. No, don't do that. I'm on Twitter. My last name is Vanaman, and my handle is Vanaman. And Camposanto.com is the home of all of our stuff, and we have a really good dev blog and a Twitter account that we keep pretty active. Okay. And I'm on Instagram, like pretty much just like my friends who follow me on Instagram. But yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking time today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was fun, guys. Okay, awesome.
Cool. And thanks for making a great game. Pretty awesome.
Oh, mm-hmm. You're welcome. Yeah. All right, guys. Take care.
And as always, thank you, listeners, for subscribing, liking, and telling others about Non-Breaking Space Show on iTunes. Remember, you can set it, forget it with Non-Breaking Space Show, the newsletter. So whenever the show is ready, you can have a new email show up in your email box by signing up for the newsletter at newsletter.nonbreakingspace.tv. Also, you can find notes and links that we've mentioned in this conversation at nonbreakingspace.tv. And be sure to follow me on Twitter at Teleject. That's TELEJECT, where I try to be funny in spite of myself. In the meantime, be sure to grab yourself a copy of Firewatch, and I'll see you next time.